Good afternoon. Good afternoon. Good afternoon. It is your host, Sharifa Hardy, and I am here with yet another amazing show. You may be asking yourself, what is Sharifa even doing on at 1 o'clock in the afternoon? You're so used to seeing me at 8 o'clock every morning on the Roundtable Talk Show, or today we have Face to Face Talk Show at 10 a.m., but it's 1 o'clock, and I had to bring you this show because it's so important. I didn't want you to miss it. We have guests today who are going to be discussing Breast Cancer Awareness Month, which is coming up in October. So before I go ahead and introduce the guests, it doesn't matter what time of the day you tune into the show, I'm going to ask you to do what I always ask you to do, and that is to go ahead and share this show. If you know someone who hasn't tuned in, they don't know about it, I need you to text them, tweet them, send them a carrier pigeon, whatever you have to do, because this show, I'm telling you, this show, they do not want to miss. And you don't want to be responsible for your friends missing out on the information that we are sharing with you today. So while you're doing that, I'm going to go ahead and introduce our first guest, Miss Arnedra Jordan. I don't know, she might be a cousin of mine or somewhere along the line, because all my Jordan people, my family that tune in and watch the show, we're going to show her some love. She is a public health policy consultant for the Susan G. Komen Foundation. Good afternoon, Arnedra. How are you?
Good afternoon. How are you today? I am doing well. Thank you for having me.
I'm excited to have you here. This was so important to me. And it's September 30th, one day before a new month, and we have to get this message out. Why is this so important to you?
Well, it's important to me because we know that us as minorities, us as African-American women, we tend to be diagnosed with breast cancer at a later stage because of lack, not so much that we don't have insurance, but we don't have good insurance. African-American women tend to be diagnosed at a younger age and with a more aggressive breast cancer. We also tend to be diagnosed and the treatment is later than it should be. We get access to treatment later. It takes a longer time to get access to treatment. So we here at Komen created the Circle of Promise Initiative. And the mission of the Circle of Promise Initiative, and I wrote this down, is to ensure that African-American women are empowered with the information and tools they need to take charge of their own health and service and serve as ambassadors in their local communities. Because we don't want to just give you the tools. We want to make sure that you give your community the tools that you need to take care of yourself, your community, and anyone else that comes across that says, hey, I need a free mammogram. I need assistance with my rent. We have a treatment assistance program. The number's 1-877-GO-KOMEN, and it helps you pay your rent. It helps you with transportation. And we just got this TAPS program together during COVID. And we're currently fundraising for it through our telethon. But it's so that we can help women in general, not just African-American women, get through the struggles that they may face when they have breast cancer diagnosis.
Now, one of the things that I heard you talk about, the rent. Certain resources, certain facilities. But what about if someone just feels like they're alone during this process? There's no one for them to talk to, no one who understands, because often when we're going through anything or when we're struggling, we feel like I'm the only one in the world who's having this experience.
We have a great support group that's called from Springs of Hope Grief Center. It's right here in Long Beach. And you can call them at www.springsofhopegriefcenter. I don't have the exact number, but that is the website. And you can Google it. It's called Springs of Hope Grief Center again. And that's your support group. We also have a support group that we do with LA Healthcare. And the Cancer Community Center has support groups. So no one has to feel alone. Or you can contact one of us. All these beauties on this screen here have been through breast cancer. And they, all I have to do is call one of them and say, hey, I need you. They might fuss at me. But when I say, hey, I need you, they're coming. And if I give someone their number, and they'll help them with going through that, because a lot of times we don't need the assistance. We just need someone to hear us because we're angry. So we're angry at that diagnosis, and that's okay. We tell you that's okay. Yeah, everybody deals with grief in a different way, and having a breast cancer diagnosis is a part of grief.
So for people who aren't really familiar with breast cancer, what they should do to prevent it, or what they should do, should they have a mammogram? What are some of the early things that someone who hasn't had this experience should do or should know?
So for breast cancer, we know that breast cancer is not preventable, but we do know there are things we can take that will help us prolong our lives, such as eating healthy, not being obese, making sure that we get our yearly mammograms at the age of 40 and over, and making sure that you get a clinical mammogram from your provider at age 21 or older. We work with the Every Woman Counts program to help women and men get into the, to get these treatments for free. So if someone needed this assistance, they would call the 1-877 Every Woman Counts number.
Do you feel that women, and this may be in the statistics, it may be more than just a feeling, but do you feel that women don't go and do that yearly? They may feel like, oh, I'll be all right. Oh, I don't have any symptoms. That's not a concern I have. And maybe they think I'll get to it every 5 years or every 3 years. What is your experience showing?
So many women have told me that they didn't have time, that, you know, we tend to put ourselves last and take care of everybody else. So many women have told me, well, it doesn't run in my family. Or so many women have told me that time just has slipped away. They've been so busy. They waited 5 to 10 years to get a mammogram and then realized that they should, now they're diagnosed and it could have been caught at an earlier stage had they not waited the 10 years. And that's why this program that we do is so important, because it helps you get the treatment and the services that you need early. So at age 40, start your mammograms, and we're here to help. Like, we can navigate you through the system. There's so many things that we have. We have a Lyft for the Cure ride. You can ride in your own personal car and go to and from your treatment programs. You get a ride to and from. It's free. You don't have to pay anything. There are so many things that we have here at Susan G. Komen, LA County. There's no excuse not to utilize the services, and our services are free. We do not charge you for the services. We do fundraise, we do accept sponsorships and donations, but we do not charge our clients for the services.
I like free. Free is my favorite number.
Yes, free
like
is my favorite too. Yes.
No, but I don't know if you know this, probably not, obviously, but I've been watching your organization for years. I went to, one of my good friends is Dorian Gregory. Dorian used to do some work with Susan G. Komen, and I would go to events and things. So I'm a huge supporter. I'm learning so much more every day. I want to go over to Terry Brooks and introduce her, because Arnedra, Terry was one of the people that you mentioned you could call whenever you're in need. Now, right. Terry is a spokesperson for the Susan G. Komen Foundation. She also has her own foundation, which helps women who are going through breast cancer and their kids who have lost their parents. Good afternoon, Terry. How are you?
Good afternoon. I'm doing well. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
I'm excited to have you. You look beautiful. You look amazing. I love the shirt. Now,
thank you.
You're so welcome. Arnedra mentioned that if she's going through something, she needs to talk, she can pick up the phone and call you. So often in this world, again, we do feel that we're alone. Tell us what makes it possible for you to be there for other people. What's your story? How does this affect you?
Well, my story is that I definitely am a breast cancer survivor. This is my 5th year anniversary. But I think what is different for me is I had a great support team. I had a great support system. And I know how that felt, because I not only went through breast cancer, but I was going through a divorce at the same time with three young children, 5, 7, and 9. And I had to go from my daughter's kindergarten graduation absolutely right to the hospital to get a blood transfusion. And the next day had the cancer removed from my body. So I knew what it meant to me having the principals, the teachers, some of the cheer coaches and soccer coaches, let alone my parents, my church family being there for me. So I just felt like, for me, I want to give back. That's my biggest thing. Not only just to give back, but to educate women that you're not in this alone. And that's my biggest motto for my foundation, which is the World of Lawnsville, named after my 3 daughters, is that there's no woman left behind with this, whether you're single, whether you're going through a divorce or whatever it may be, because there are a lot of women out there they're just, you know, feeling like it's over. You know, you get this diagnosis, there's nothing that I can do. So even lately, I've been trying to go out there and encourage women, if you're diagnosed with this, go out and exercise, you know, get some fresh air, feel like you can pick up the phone to call someone and, you know, go ahead and vent, go ahead and cry. It's your journey. It's your story. And don't feel like, you know, you're left alone and you're isolated, because we're here to help. And I enjoy speaking to women and just being able to tell my story, the what I've gone through.
Were you angry when you were first diagnosed? I mean, because you mentioned going through a divorce, all of this is coming down with you at once. We don't, as women, often allow ourselves to even acknowledge that we are angry, that we're feeling angry. Were you feeling angry at the time?
You know what? I wasn't. That's why I love to tell my story, because after going through a mammogram, I had to go back twice. I was diagnosed with ductal carcinoma in situ, which is where the cancer is in the breast tissue in the ducts. And it doesn't really spread, but mine did spread to my lymph nodes, because it was trying to figure out, you know, am I going through this? Do I have breast cancer? But I did feel a lump. So after going back there twice, someone referred me to the Corona Imaging Center and they did an ultrasound mammogram. So once they did that, they said, you know, the radiologist said, this looks like cancer, breast cancer. And I said, okay. And there were two nurses in the back, I'll never forget, just rubbing their hands, and they were so nervous. And I said to them then, my faith is going to carry me through. I'm going to be fine. I have a date. So I need to go home and I need to get dressed. And that's just really was my kickoff to really receiving that diagnosis. And I never turned back from it. I just kept going. Okay. Because...
Well, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but I tend to cut people off because that's what I do. But I just sometimes, you know, I'm 44, my hearing isn't what it used to be. But did you say you had to go to a date? Like a date, like you were going out on a date? Like,
oh, I was going out on a date. Yes. So this diagnosis wasn't going to stop me. So I needed to go home and get ready.
I've never in my life heard something like that. I've heard, I got to live for my kids. I've heard, you know what I mean?
The told world. You was, off the chain.
Terry said, did you marry him at least? Like,
No. It was someone that I had previously dated and who had been there for me through my whole journey for breast cancer. Like, he and I are very close. It's an amazing story that we may have to share some other time, but it just gave me that lift that I was going to be fine, because again, I had three small children. So I couldn't think about, I'm not going to make it, or what is this going to do to me? Or what is this going to do to my self-esteem? So I try to recreate and reinvent myself that I'm going through this divorce. It was crazy at the time. I pretty much lost everything, two homes, everything, literally lost everything. Having to live with other people, having to depend on other people, which never was my story. It was always the one giving and helping other people. So that's why it's so important for me to grab a hold to women and say, I got you. You're going to be okay. You're going to be fine. And just my girls, their story is so beautiful because they were on the journey with me. They never complained. We had to get up at 5:30 in the morning commuting from Long Beach, LA to Corona so they can get to school. I mean, coming back home to Long Beach and LA at 9:30 at night and starting the same schedule because I had cheerleaders, I have soccer players, but you keep going. And that's my message to women. Don't stop. Keep going for yourself. The better you are, the better mom you are for your children.
And that's one of the things that I most admire about Terry was she got up at 5:30 in the morning. We would call each other because I also teach part-time at West LA. So between Terry and Kenneth, I'm calling them at 5:30 in the morning. Like, I'm on the freeway, wake up. And so Kenneth lives on the East Coast, right? So I'm like, get up and I'm going to, you need to talk to me. And I would call Terry and Terry would say, we're pushing it on this freeway, but we're going to get through it. And that's what we do. We push through it.
Can I call y'all too?
Yes.
Yes.
Three-way, you in. Yes.
I just like being in with the in crowd. You know what I mean? I don't even know what y'all talking about. I just want to be on the call. But I want to introduce Mr. Kenneth Todd, because we keep talking about inspiring women and motivating women. And we have Kenneth here, spokesperson for the Susan G. Komen Foundation. Why is this so important to you, Kenneth?
For multiple reasons. I am a breast cancer survivor myself. As I call myself a thriver, people don't know, but about maybe 1% of men, maybe more, I don't know, at least 1% of men get breast cancer. And so the only way to be inducted into this club is by going through this. So you get forced into it one day. And I guess I can just kind of tell my story really quickly. For me, I'm an actor and I had moved from New York City to Los Angeles. And I'm very hairy. I don't know if y'all can see this, but I'm a very hairy person.
And were you about to take off your shirt, Kenneth?
No, I wasn't.
I'm sorry, I got distracted. I told y'all, this is my fourth show today. I'm easily distracted.
Oh, that's fine. Now listen, so I ended up, I had really bad allergies and sinuses when I moved to LA. And I had felt a bump before on my chest. I just thought it was ingrown hair because I used clippers and all of that. And so it didn't hurt. It was just there. And I just mentioned to my doctor about, I had a bump. He looked at it, he didn't even know what it was. And so from there, he said, let's do a biopsy. And not in a million years would I ever imagine that I would have stage 2 breast cancer. It's something hard to hear.
Did you have a date lined up?
Yes,
probably me.
You know, no, I'm just saying, because that's what gave Terry the strength to go on with her date and her diagnosis. All you gotta do is get you a good date going on, and then I'm sorry.
I have a son who's 16, so that was my motivation. So
okay, see, I told you, Terry. I told you, you was this again.
His motivation is also all of us.
Absolutely, a community of people. Like Terry and everyone else here, it's just like there's the community. And even though you kind of feel lonely just a little bit because you're still like the only man, 10 times out of 10. And it's just like, oh, but you know, at the end of the day, this is what I want to say, and it's really important. Early detection is key. I think men and women, I don't care who you are, you should do self-examinations. If you don't know how to do it, they're online. I say start. I think, Anisha, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but mammograms, what age is it for that they tell you to start doing mammograms?
40. So Susan G. Komen recommendations are age 40, and that is Susan G. Komen. And the reason why we say age 40 is because if we can catch breast cancer early, then you are more likely to not succumb to the disease. You are more likely to survive from the disease. So our recommendations is age 40. Now, the American Cancer Society's recommendation is age 50. Susan G. Komen's is age 40. And everybody on here, if you guys did not get a mammogram at the age of 40, I would not be sitting here with you today. So
and we know that age 40,
right.
So I would even encourage you to do that. I mean, you have to be your own advocate, to be honest with you. Because to be honest with you, Terry introduced me to Anaya Strong's family. Anaya, how old was she? She was
26.
She was 26
when she lost her life.
She has 3 wonderful boys who I pretty much adopted, who I love so much. She was 26 years old and she lost her life. So I want to encourage women, if you have cycles, I would every month when that cycle comes, check, fellas, just check monthly, because I'm telling you, early detection is key. I know a lot of times men, we don't like to go to the doctors, but if you have young boys, women, if you're watching, encourage your men, encourage your sons to go to the doctor, because I know sometimes it's like the macho thing not to go to the doctor, but let me tell you, fellas, go, because it can change your life.
Right, and share with your loved ones. You don't have to get on Facebook and share, but share with your loved ones so that they don't go through the same thing, you know? A lot of times we can eliminate some of the things that happen if we would all share. I don't know if everyone's seen, but the National Institute of Health is hosting We're All In, and it's talking about African-Americans when they pass away, leaving their records. I'm a big advocate for clinical trials, and I'll tell you why I'm a big advocate for clinical trials. If you are African-American and the medication that we're taking was tested on a white male who might be 65 years old, it might not work for you. It might not work for Marissa, who is of Latino descent, if it was given to a white male who is 65 years old. And then we wonder why the treatment, we went through all this hard treatment and it doesn't work. So All In is all they're asking for is that we leave our medical records to them when you die. Because if you look in the 20s, 30s, and 40s, we didn't go to the doctors, 50s, 60s, and 70s. So they really don't have a history of why we're getting breast cancer, of why we have high blood pressure. We know it's our diet, but what makes us not be able to eat certain things? So if, you know, really think about clinical trials, I know that there is some reasons why we as minorities don't participate, but get in a good clinical trial, ask questions.
That's our Arnijo's way, especially asking me to be part of a clinical trial.
I got So I might be asking Kenneth soon to be part of a clinical trial, but we'll talk about that offline. I can no longer bribe him with because we are we're quarantined. But once I can go back to bribing him with food, I will bribe.
I'm gonna negotiate this deal for Kenneth. Kenneth says Postmates, Uber Eats, you know, there is a way.
With me and Terry. He needs to eat it with me, Terry, and Jennifer, and Sharifa. Yeah, listen to us.
A nice massage.
Yes, now we can do lunch outside. Yes.
I didn't negotiate that in, but I want to bring in Marissa. Marissa is a breast cancer survivor as well. Tell us your welcome, first of all, Marissa. Thank you for joining us.
Well, I was diagnosed when I was 40. I have four children. And at the age they were, at that time, they were 14, 12, 9, and 2.5. My son was 2.5.
Oh, wow.
And when I found out, it was because I found a lump on myself. So I went to the doctor right away. And sure enough, the doctor is like, okay, we're going to go ahead and send you to go get a biopsy. And a mammogram, no, ultrasound and a mammogram. So then when I had that done, when I got back for him to give me the results, he told me, okay, so your breast is like a clock. So at 10 o'clock, you know, the lump that we saw might be cancer. Mm-hmm. And the reaction that I gave him was like, okay, so what's my next step? Mm-hmm. And the doctor was like, what do you mean? I'm like, well, yes, you already, he goes, do you understand what I said? I go, yes, you told me that at 10 o'clock on my breast, you know, the lump that I found, it could be breast cancer. I guess he didn't expect for the reaction that I gave him. And because when I left the office, he even told the nurse, can you tell Marissa what I just said? I was like, I do understand, you know, and I go, and like I said, you know, so he said, my next step is this and this, so we're going to get whatever needs to be done. But at that time, you know, it was like, I guess when I found my lump, I put myself in that mode of saying it could be breast cancer, you know. But my family that I knew, no one had breast cancer. But I found out after talking to my mom, because my mom was a single mom of two. And she told me that on my father's side of the family, two of his sisters had passed away of breast cancer.
Wow, so you didn't even know that?
I didn't know this. And I told my mom, how come you never, you know, even mentioned anything from my mom, from my dad's side of the family? And she goes, because I never thought that you might have the gene or you might have that illness. And, you know, it hit the family really, really hard. My children who were small, you know, my oldest, the day that I got home and I told them that I had breast cancer, she ran out of the house to a house crying.
Mm-hmm. Let me let you finish, Marissa, real quick. But I just want to go back to Arnijo real quick because I want to talk a little bit about statistics. One of the things that Marissa talked about is that she had people in her family who passed away from this. What do the statistics show as far as the numbers, as far as people who have it in their family and people who don't, if you have that information?
It's only about 25% of people who have breast cancer in their family. The majority of women that we talk to do not have breast cancer in their family. And a lot of times also, we don't know what grandma died from. We just know she died and we think it's diabetes, and we find out later that grandma died from breast cancer. Also, sometimes we don't understand what metastatic breast cancer is. So we think that the person died from lung cancer when they really died from breast cancer, because it started in the breast and then it metastasized to other organs. So that is some of the statistics. Marissa and I have been friends about 20 something years.
Yes.
So we go way back. So we worked together. We were just one big happy family. So we worked at Compton Unified for years together. And so our offices were right next door to each other. Yes, our offices were right next door to each other. And we talk all the time. So, when it hits close to home like that, it's scary. It's really scary, but we knew that we were going to get her through it. So, yeah.
That's why I called it and I found out.
Right. Yes, because we knew. What you say, Kenna?
It's also a genetic test, which...
Yes, for the BRCA1 gene. Yeah.
You want to tell them about it?
So you can also do genetic testing at Komen. We have a whole public policy team. And this public policy team advocates for women who have breast cancer. And sometimes the laws that we advocate for just don't affect women who have breast cancer. It affects everyone who has cancer. Our oral parity law, that there's a cap, a $250 cap on chemo if you want to take chemo through a pill form versus intravenously. We have genetic testing. We're asking Congress to make sure that genetic testing is paid for by the insurance company and that you don't have to keep asking and getting approvals. If you know, so that you can find out if the BRCA1 gene or BRCA2 gene is in your family, because we know that if maybe your grandmother had breast cancer and all three of her sisters died from breast cancer, but maybe you don't know your family history. So that's why it's important also that we talk about not just breast cancer at a local level, but on a state and a national level, and that we get our council people and our Congress people and anybody who is in power who makes decisions to make sure that they make the right decisions for us as their constituents.
Absolutely, that's right. Marissa, I want to go back to you because I cut you off. You were talking about the response. She ran out the door. I just wanted you to continue where you were. I apologize.
Well, after that, she just, because we just cried it out. We screamed and everything. But I told her, we're going to get through it together. Mm. Because this was in 2015, in October, when I found out.
Five years.
It's during breast cancer awareness. And sure enough, with their support and their help and everything, now, I was telling Arnidra, because she asked me, she's already 18, she graduated, she just got a new job, and I can see that she sees me, and she's like, wow, because she's seen me talk to other women, and I told them, you need to go get checked. You need to go. I know that for us Latino women, it's hard. I go, but just like we go and take our kids to the dentist and getting their shots and everything, we need to take care of ourselves. And my children go here to Compton Unified School District also. And when I had my surgery, I had a couple of women come up to me and they're like, but we're scared. And this, I'm like, I know you're scared. I know it's painful, but you need to go ahead and get detected at an early age. Mm. So then after I found out that a lot of these women did go and get checked, they went and got their mammograms that they had not gotten in years, their pap smears. And they're like, they felt like a big relief because it was coming from me. They've known me here at the district. They know me at the school. And knowing that I was such a strong person going through the cancer, still working, still taking care of my children and giving them the support, then, and it felt good. It felt really good knowing that at least with one person that you get to go get checked, I think that's my purpose here in life now, that.
If we can all help one person. One of the things that Terry mentioned earlier when she got her diagnosis was her faith. Marissa, was your faith a big part of your strength during this process?
It was. I think it was. And my faith, my family, and, you know, just not giving up. And, you know, I know that we have the family and everything, but I thought of myself first, because I'm like, if I don't help myself, how am I going to help my family?
Right.
How am I going to get my four little ones to continue in life? And yes, faith has a lot to do. And I think that's why because I would get my chemos on Fridays. Mondays, I was back to work.
Wow. Wow. Marissa, wow. That's impressive. What are some of the things that you did for self-care?
Pardon me? I didn't hear.
What are some of the things that you did for self-care to take care of yourself during this process?
Because it was on a Friday, I would go ahead and I would just be in my room. I would not isolate myself. I would be in my room, but my children would be around. And my husband, he was a big support also. We would be like, okay, you know, it's Saturday. Let's go out to the restaurant. Let's go to the movies. And I would be like, okay. But I think it had a lot to do also that my chemo, which was, you know, in itself, you know, we know that a lot of people go through getting sick with the chemo and everything. I didn't. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it was because of me still eating, even though the food didn't taste like anything, but I still had to feed my children, and our Nidra knows that I would still cook. So I would still.
You didn't get sleepy?
You know? So
I had a question for you, Marissa.
I'm just curious. Yes. All the ladies here, I'm just curious. I was sleepy. I was tired. I don't know about y'all. I mean,
I didn't have chemo.
You didn't do chemo?
I didn't. I opted for the double mastectomy. And so I didn't have to do, I was initially supposed to do a lumpectomy and then do radiation. But then when I went back to get what I thought was my radiation schedule, they're like, oh, we're so sorry. It was invasive. We need to remove one breast. And so I said, no, take both. And so since they took both, that eliminated me having to do the chemo and the radiation.
Really? Well, let's introduce Ms. Sheba Gillis to the conversation. You jumped right out there. You've spoken. We referred to you several times, and you are also a breast cancer survivor. How did you find out? You were sharing your story.
So my story is a little bit different. And so I was diagnosed before that 40-year-old mark where they recommend. And so the reason that it piqued my interest, I have a sister, an older sister on my paternal side who was diagnosed with breast cancer in her 20s. And so okay. I had gone through that whole journey with her, and she had young children at the time, and we really rallied around her, and then she was in remission and everything was fine. And then my grandmother on my maternal side was diagnosed. And so she was fine, went into remission, and it came back, and ultimately she died from breast cancer. And so at the time I was like 33, 34, I started harassing my doctor. I didn't feel any lumps. I didn't, you know, I wasn't having discomfort. I was just like, okay, it's on the maternal side and the paternal side. Like, check me out. I need it. Peace of mind. And I went back and forth with my doctor for about a year, kind of talked about advocacy. And I literally had to advocate for myself to the point where I finally cut up one day in one of my appointments, like, look, who else do I need to talk to? I'm asking you, I want to be tested. And they did the initial screening and they found some areas of concern, and I had two biopsies, but they were benign. And so then
I want to stop you. Okay. Again, I always cut people off, but when I do, it's usually a good reason. I'm just giving you a hard time. But for you, this, you understand all of that. Many of our viewers are unsure of the process, unsure mm-hmm. of exactly what you need. So I want to kind of slow this down a little bit.
Okay.
You said to be an advocate for yourself in that right before you cut up, because sometimes you have to cut up. But were you saying that you saw no symptoms, but because it was on your paternal side and on your maternal side, you said something has to be here, even though your doctors are saying you're too young, we're not even going to look at all? Did I understand that correctly?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's what it was. But I'm a worrier. And so I was like, nope, I just, for my peace of mind, I need to know. Mm-hmm. And so they found the areas of concern, and they said, it's nothing, you're okay. But now, even though you're not 40, you need to start coming in every year for a mammogram. Well, the next year I was pregnant, and so I couldn't go. And then I breastfed for a year, so I didn't go. And then one day I was just driving, and Kaiser kept calling me. I'm like, I don't have time, I have this baby. And I said, you know what, let me go. And the technician was like, whoa. And I was like, whoa. She said, I see something, but don't worry because you just finished breastfeeding, you're just in the ducts and it's probably milk. She said, I'll send you to the hospital for higher imaging. I said, okay, that's fine. And that guy again was like, check this out. It like quadrupled in size. And I was like, what? But it was from me taking like all of the pills and supplements and everything to try to produce milk. And so I finally found out that I had breast cancer 1 week after my daughter's first birthday. Oh. And so my daughter, yeah, my daughter was a preemie. And at the time she didn't walk. She did everything a little bit later. She was 3 months early. And so my first thought was, oh my goodness, like I'm a single mom. I have this baby who cannot do anything for herself. What am I going to do? And so I didn't know anything. I didn't want to research anything because I didn't want to scare myself. And so I walked into my first appointment and the first thing the doctor said is, okay, what are we doing? And I was like, what? I said, I don't know.
She's like, his job?
Right, basically. I'm like, I don't know. What? Yes, she said, oh, I'm sorry. People usually come in and they've done their research and they know. I said, I didn't look at anything. I said, you know, tell me my options and let me know. And so I did the lumpectomy. And then Terry mentioned like family just rallying around you. And so that literally, my family was flying in and out of California, taking weeks at a time. My sister was coming, my dad was coming from Michigan at the time. My dad was dealing with lung cancer. But it was literally like a rotating shift of everybody just being here to support my sorority sisters, my coworkers, everybody was on deck. But the advocacy is so important. And you also talked about the testing for the gene. That became super important for me because our family, I have so many nieces and I immediately thought about my daughter. And I was like, oh, if we can do something, if we know ahead of time and there's something we can do to circumvent it, I definitely want to do it. And luckily I didn't have to go through any of the red tape or the advocating. It was automatic. It was no problem. You can get it once in your lifetime through my insurance. I'm able to get the test. And so nothing came back and I'm fine now. We have some scares every now and then. I had a scare a few months ago where they found something and I had to go through another biopsy and just sort of the trauma of that. And it's funny because I knew I was going in to get a scan. And so I went to the hospital. My mom said, do you want me to go? I said, oh no, it's just the scan. I'll be fine. But just walking down that same corridor and going into the breast center, I had a major meltdown. My mom's like, I can come right now. I'm like, okay. But luckily, you talk about the support of friends. And I've had a couple of friends who have had breast cancer, one right now who's in a metastatic battle, that have just like wrapped themselves around me and offered so much guidance and support. I'm super grateful for it.
I would like to say something if it's okay.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
For me, it was the totally opposite. I went through a mental breakdown, but I didn't know I was having a mental breakdown, honestly. I had blockage because for me, I went into survival mode and I have so many people that love me and I love them, but I didn't tell anybody. I kept it a secret. And I broke down so much that people probably thought I was going crazy because I was holding all of this stuff in and I'm not myself. And I wish that I would have allowed people initially to help me, but I didn't want to be a burden, nor did I imagine telling 40, 50 people this information that love you. You're kind of reliving that information. You're reliving it every time and every time. And people are like, you know, why didn't you tell me? But it wasn't about them. It was about me trying to survive. It would be times where I'll be afraid I would not wake up the next day, but I wish that I would have allowed people to love me because people will be there for you if you allow them. And that's so important. I want to encourage anybody that I know sometimes you don't want to be a burden, but trust me, if you have like pick up the phone, allow people to love you because that will help. At the very end, I allow people and I'm like, wait a minute, I could have had all this all alone. But yeah, I want to encourage people to allow people to love you through this process.
Sometimes, let me ask you this question, Kenneth. I'm sorry, go ahead, Sheba.
I was gonna say sometimes you do feel like a burden because I didn't want to tell my mom immediately when I found out. I was almost afraid to tell her because my grandmother had just died a year and a half before from breast cancer. And my mom had taken care of her and had watched her go through that battle and lose it. And so immediately I felt guilty. I said, oh, I don't want her to have to go through this again. I was like seriously scared to tell her and feeling like I was burdening her with it. And of course it wasn't a burden to her. She went right into mama mode and loved on me and did everything she had to do. But I understand that feeling of thinking that you're a burden.
Yes, So Kenneth, I love what you had to say, but I wanted to ask this question. When you say people, we're in California, but people could love you more, or you would have allowed them to love you more. Sometimes people are afraid of being a burden. Did people come to you and say, you know what, if I would have known, I would have done this for you. If I would have known, I would have done that for you. And you looking back, say, you know what, that really would have been helpful. Because sometimes we don't want to ask for help, or we don't know how to ask for help, but they would have helped us with those things.
Well, if you think you're a strong person, you think you can do it by yourself. You know what I'm saying? But initially, that's what I thought I could do. And so people would have, but they were, I had people, my friends, they end up, we had like this little prayer, because we talked about, it's Marissa, right? And we talked about faith. So all my friends, we came together. We did like this circle. And I remember we had food. Everything was like vegan when they all came over. And because I had lost 35 pounds, maybe 40. I remember posting a picture on Instagram. People thought I was sick with something else. I don't even know. And they all came together and we all prayed and we all meditated together. And that's when I knew, I was like, okay, Kenneth, you know, it's people that love you and you need to allow them to go through this process. And they were very supportive.
Terry, how about you? Do you feel that people would have supported you more had they known more, or you just went home, told everyone?
I told everyone. I belonged to a church that was almost 5,000 members. So I put myself on the prayer list. I wanted everyone to know what I was going through, because sometimes when you keep quiet, then no one can help you. And I wasn't doing any research on my own. It was prayer first. Okay, and God, where are we going with this? But when I put myself on the prayer list, because I opted to do everything naturally, I did do a double mastectomy, but I had doctors who wouldn't even perform the surgery because they wanted me to do chemotherapy first. And I said, absolutely not. My mother went through it. I took her to all of her appointments for radiation and chemotherapy. And I just saw the toll that it took on her body. So putting myself on the prayer list, I had someone pull me to the side after church and said their brother had cancer in his back and he literally had a hole. They said, you have to get over to, can't even think of the name of this place, and get apricot kernels. And I said, okay. I said, what does it do? They said, any seeds pretty much help kill cancer cells. So I did. I don't know why I'm drawing a blank, because I refer everybody to this place in Chino Hills. And it's a place that it's a lot of natural products. So that's what I did. I got on apricot kernels, alkaline water, turmeric. I was drinking lemon water and still trying to work out. And I cut my sugar totally. And by the time I got to my doctor's office, he said, the cancer's not going to kill you. It's, where's your sugar? What happened? I said, okay, no problem. I'll go get a Pepsi and a peach shake from Chick-fil-A and the numbers will go back up. But I think it's so important. My mother was more so, you can't tell everybody. Why are you telling everyone? But to me, that's just, I felt like God had given me this so I can encourage other women and educate women. We can't hide, you know? And like Kenneth said, sometimes you just want to feel alone, because what I also find is people are so unfortunately ignorant to when you're going
that's
through.
That's what I was going to say.
I have people say, well, are you going to take off your breast? Are you going to lose your hair? Well, no. I hadn't even made any decisions yet. So right. What do you mean? No, I haven't made any decisions. And you almost have to just give them that I'm going to be fine. I'm going to be okay. Because what happens when you start telling people, they panic. They go into the fear mode and you're not there yet, you know? So it's like, no, wait a minute. So I do get the flip side where Kenneth wanted to kind of keep himself, you know, keep it to himself. But I have to say, Kenneth has an amazing support team. Like when we did the pink walk, I mean, it was the anniversary of my mother passing a year and his whole team embraced me. They loved on me. When I wanted to do a Christmas party for the boys with Nice Strong, Kenneth came out and opened his home. And I mean, when they said those kids tore up his walls, I'm like, Kenneth, oh my gosh, your new white walls. He's like, don't even worry about it. But Santa Claus was there. But it's just when you connect and you have a community, and that's the big thing with the Circle of Promise. You know, you have people that you can call on when we meet, you can share, you can care. We don't know what anyone's going through unless they come out and tell us. So I was on field trips. I think after I had one of my surgeries, I had two drains hanging and I was on to a field trip at Catalina and everybody knew. So the kids would get my luggage and my daughter and the principal said, are you going on this field trip? I said, absolutely. Wouldn't miss it for the world. So for me, just keeping going, I'm a former athlete. So So I couldn't quit. I couldn't sit down. I couldn't be still. I needed to keep going and telling what I was going through at the time.
That goes back.
And I want to say something before Kenneth says something really quick. We have to learn also how to respond when people tell us something like, I have cancer, I have diabetes. Don't go and say, oh, my aunt died from breast cancer, you're going to die. That is not the response. Your response should be, how can I help? Or your response should be, I'm going to pray for you. Whatever, however you feel, but don't tell people that your aunt died and she died horribly and she died at home and in the hospice and they left her on the ground. And I'm like, why would you tell somebody that? But this is what people tend to do. So when people keep this stuff to themselves, when they keep the diagnosis to themselves, you know, sometimes, like Kenneth said, they experience the mental breakdown, the grief, because they feel like they can't share it, because the response should not be, you're going to die. That is not the response.
But then this
the response should be, thing. How can I help?
But then this is a psychological thing after you have it. Now I'm wondering, now I'm, you know, I meet all these women, other people that actually die. And I'm like, you know, man, like, I'm glad to be here. But you like, that could have been you, but then you start feeling really bad for being here. I'm not gonna say I'm glad, it's a weird feeling, because you're like, I'm grateful to be here, but then like, you know, that could have happened to you and you just wish that didn't happen to that person. You start feeling a little guilty for me anyway.
Right, that's the survivor guilt that we talk about. Yeah, that's the survivor syndrome, yeah.
Well, let's talk about that, Arnedra, the survivor's guilt.
So sometimes, especially when you're in an organization like Susan G. Komen, and we have some survivors who don't, some breast cancer survivors who unfortunately have passed away from the disease, then we have some survivors who feel a survivor guilt, like, why am I still here and this person died? And, or is that going to happen to me? I have a lot of people who will call me and say, you know, I heard such and such die. Is that going to happen to me? And so my response is always, we all are going to die. However, you're not going to die right now of breast cancer, you know? So, because I can't tell you you're not going to die, because then I would be not telling the truth. But, you know, everybody has an expiration date. And you don't know that expiration date. And unfortunately, that was their time, whether they died from breast cancer, diabetes, a heart attack, that was just their time. And, you know, we have to remember to live in the moment and live and not take anything for granted. I read this post on Facebook that said, when you procrastinate, it's as if you're saying that you have an extra day to do. To live, and that's not true. So don't procrastinate, which got me very upset, because I love to procrastinate to the last minute. But it's true. None of us are guaranteed tomorrow. I could go out and walk in front of a car. So, you know, you don't have to feel guilty as a survivor because someone succumbed to the disease.
I also just want to encourage all the people that are watching right now that if you're afraid, I mean, to go, maybe ask a friend. I know a lot of times, you know, you need to go get checked out, because it's so important. It's so important. Like, there are different methods. We all went through experiences completely different. We all did different things. So I will say this, that talk to your doctor, whatever route you go, talk to your doctor, because, you know, this is a very individual situation. However, we all went through different situations and we did different methods. And I'm not going to say one is wrong. I'm not going to say one is right, but always consult with your doctor.
Right. Cause you do what's the best choice for you. You know, everybody's different. Everybody's makeup is different.
Sheba, you were going to say something?
Oh no, he was talking about support, having someone go with you. When I had my first biopsy, I think I had like 5 or 6 people in the waiting room with me, because when people heard I was going, they're like, I'm coming too, I'll be there for support. And I'm like, oh, I already have, you know, my mom's going there. When I came out, it was even more people. And I was like, oh, that's so sweet. Like, thank you.
Right. Now we also have to talk about what support looks like in the age of COVID.
That's what I'm about to say. One of my friends, she's one of my friends. She started treatment last Friday. And, you know, in the room, when you're getting chemo, there's other people in there with you. I don't know about where y'all were, but when I did it, there was other people in the room. But now they won't even let anybody else in, like her family members or anybody else, be with her. And I'm like, that's very difficult.
Right, right. So we have to talk about, you know, now we know that people are isolated. So how do we support them through the age of COVID? And one of the things is FaceTime. You know, they can FaceTime us and talk to us. We can also send cards before they go to the hospital, call them while they're in there, letting them know that you're thinking of them, you know, while they're driving to the hospital, because now that the only person that can go in is the person who's getting the services.
Send them a warm blanket.
Huh?
Warm blanket. Well,
yeah, buy them a nice blanket in their favorite color. Just something so that they know as they're going through their treatment, they can just have good vibes and good thoughts, because this is hard now, because we can't go to the hospital anymore. I can't send a survivor to go down there and sit with you anymore. You know, so we have to think outside the box and think how we're going to support our survivors who are now going through breast cancer.
Okay, Arnedra, talk to us about October. Are there any specific dates, fundraisers, events, things we're doing on social media, colors, paint that we're wearing? What's going on in October?
We have a whole lot of stuff going on in October. So October 1st, we're launching our Metastatic Breast Cancer Conference. It will be 31 days of metastatic breast cancer. So you can watch us on Hoover. The link is on our Susan G. Komen page. October 3rd, we are hosting our telethon. This is our first time hosting a telethon. I know Marissa and Sheba and Terry and Kenneth all did a video. This is live from 6 to 8 at the Citadel Outlet. I will be in Chicago that weekend. I am another breast cancer survivor asked me to write a book with her, and we wrote a book, and Barnes & Noble picked up the book. So we're going to Chicago, thank you, to sign the book. And it's called The 12 Shades of Breast Cancer, and it's about their stories. It's just how I ran the Circle of Promise. It's not about me. It's about the breast cancer survivors and their stories. So we have that coming up. There's a couple of faith-based churches that are hosting events. You can look at them on our Susan G. Komen page. We also are going to host a survivor luncheon that I haven't put together yet, so don't talk about me. It's the last Sunday of October, but it's in us a breast cancer luncheon, and you know we love to support our survivors and honor our survivors, and you know I like to have fun, so we're gonna have some fun on here on our breast cancer survivor luncheon. And so we just you know, we have a lot of things going on. Please wear your pink, but wear your pink every day. Wear your pink, and not just October, wear your pink in November and December, because breast cancer is just not in October. Shh, I need you quiet. Breast cancer is not just in October. Breast cancer is all year long, and we need to talk about it. We need to host the conversations about it. We need to make sure that we talk to, our friends, our family. And my 7-year-old is getting himself sold out the refrigerator. And so we just need to make sure that we, as a group, make sure that we take care of each other, because if we don't take care of each other, then we won't be here as a group. Okay, so we have to take care of each other. And that's what I think we all have in common, is that we take care of each other. We can pick up the phone and call each other at 5. It's not like, oh, don't call me at 5 o'clock in the morning. It's what happened? What, how can I help you? What's wrong?
This conference call is at 5 o'clock. I didn't know the call was at 5 a.m. I thought it was a little later. So when
it's at 5 a.m. in the morning,
I wanted to be on this conference call. I don't call me. I'm no longer available. Now,
it's 5 a.m. in the morning.
That's great. That's good. I wanted to be a part of the in crowd. Now I'm not too sure. Now I'm in the lazy kids crowd. I'll be up getting ready for my show. I have had such a wonderful time learning, sharing, inspiring others. We are coming down to the last few minutes of the show. And what I love to do at the end of every show is just simply allow my guests the opportunity to speak directly to the audience, to everyone who is watching this show live, as well as everyone who is watching it in the archives, and simply let them know what you want them to take away from your appearance here today. And we're going to start with you, Marissa.
And well, I just want to let everybody know to please, 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 please go and get checked. I'm not only a breast cancer survivor, but in March, I had a surgery because I was at high risk of getting ovarian cancer. Oh. So, I mean, like I said, yes, it hurts. Yes, you know, it's scary, but if you go and get it done on time, you will be like us, survivors, and never lose hope. Always have your hope first. And I, we're here, like Arnidra said, you need to talk to any one of us. I've talked to several people that Arnidra has told me to go ahead and give them a call, and they feel it at ease because they just don't know how to handle it sometimes. And we've been there. We kind of know what to say, or maybe just by letting the person talk to you and let their emotions out, because maybe they just want to talk to someone that they don't know personally.
Absolutely.
And, but we're here. We're here. I'm here. Girl power.
Go girl power. I love it.
Sheba, what my girl power on, you know?
And you'll take that call.
We're superheroes.
You will take that call. Sheba, what do you have for us?
I think I would just say, in my case, because I wasn't 40 yet, if you're younger and if you have red flags or things that concern you, whether it's in your family history or just you don't feel right, to make sure that you advocate for yourself and don't take no for an answer. And then to also, we talked about the support system, just really allow your support system to lift you up and to be there to guide you through.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you. Kenneth, what do you have for us?
Live well. Have a balance in your life, whether that's exercising, meditation, make sure you go to the doctor annually, get your teeth checked out. All of those things help you in your overall health. So just don't take it all, make a cocktail. It's important to be able to have multiple things in your life to have a balance.
Yes, I definitely agree. Terry, what do you have for us?
I want to say, be encouraged. Enjoy your every day. Tomorrow is not promised, let alone this evening. But just fight with no fear. Always have the mindset of taking something away of being positive and being your own advocate. And it's not even just going to get your mammogram. I really encourage that, but to go back and get the results. We have so many women that are so scared and so fearful of the results. They'll get the mammogram, but they won't go back to get the results. Don't stop at just going. Also finish the course. I always tell people, finish the race, and you know, and find you a great support group and a support team where, like Arnidra, I can call her up when I was going through, hey, can I come over and sleep over? She's like, my home is your home. She would always open her home to me. Like I said, Kenneth was there for me. It wasn't just the breast cancer, but it was also going through losing my mother to metastatic breast cancer. So you just never know what somebody's journey is. So stay positive, be positive. Whatever comes out of your mouth, let it flow with love and kindness and just enjoy in your heart and be there for somebody who's going through no matter what it is.
I forgot something that's really important.
Okay, but you're gonna have to hold on because I wanted to tell Terry, I love your spirit. I love your spirit. That's why I said that prayer circle, that prayer list, that worked, because you are here to be a blessing for other people. And I can definitely feel your spirit. Kenneth, what would you like to share?
I want to say this, you might need to back me up on this. Now, listen, I do
back him up.
I do know this for women. A lot of women don't get their checkups after 5, 10, 15 years. They don't go back. You got to keep going to the doctor no matter what, because a lot of times they can end up dying because of not going back. If you catch it early, it's important to, you know, maintain that makeup of going to the doctor.
Right. Yes. Arnidra, take us on out.
Okay, so I'm going to say a couple of things. One, you have to allow people to love you, and you have to love people where they're at. So it's not our job to tell someone that they're not to grieve. It's our job to love them where they're at. I always tell people I look forward to the day that I have to find a new job, that I have to call all of you and say, I'm going to need a job or else I'm going to have to come live with you. And y'all know I don't do anything. So I just look forward to that day. I know that one day there will be a treatment, a shot, something that will eradicate breast cancer. And the last thing, know that we're here until we do eradicate breast cancer, because what we want to let everyone know is that where you live should not determine if you live. And you know that is the most important thing. Where you live should not should not determine whether you live. And we all can look at the makeup of our neighborhoods and drive right across the street and look at another neighborhood and know that they are suffering from poverty and don't have access. So that is our goal here at Susan G. Komen, to love you and to make sure that we eradicate breast cancer.
If people need more information, where can they go?
So if people need more information, they can call me. My work number is 10-575-3011, extension 210, or you can look us up, www.komenlacounty.org.
Okay, and also follow you on social media. I want to thank all of you for being so vulnerable, authentic, to share your stories and to be a guest today on this special episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. We did this just for you so you can find out more information and you can get this information early. It may help to save lives. I also want to thank everyone who tuned in to watch the show live, as well as everyone who is watching it in the archives. Just because you're watching in the archives doesn't mean you're not still important, whether you're watching it today, tomorrow, 2 days from now, or even 2 years from now. Please go ahead and share this show, because I'm sure this information will help someone. So if you are interested in more information or how to be a guest, please visit my website at asksharifa.com. Until the next time, everyone have a safe and a blessed day. Bye now.
Bye.